Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Today on the Mark Steiner Show, please pardon our dust as we travel to the construction site of a new Everyman Theater. They're moving across town after 12 years to Fayette and Utah Streets. And artistic director Vincent Lancisi gives us a tour of the new building.
Oh, this is amazing. So this design, just start from the top of the design.
Okay.
Why you design? Because one thing about Everyman is its intimacy, right?
It's really about breaking down the barriers between the actor and the audience. So it's not only that we want the audience close to us, but we want it so that the actor doesn't have to do anything artificial to reach them. They get to have a conversation with them. So we didn't want stadium seating because it means actors have to look up at the heavens or down low for the people that are sitting way down below. They actually just get to look straight out and talk to the people. We spent a lot of time on acoustical issues around the theater because, you know, acousticians or acoustical stuff is, it's an art, not a science. You know what I mean? You can spend millions of dollars on it and not achieve it. Think about what some of the symphony halls go through to get the perfect sound for the symphony. But here we spent a lot of time, and what we did was we built a theater within a theater. So you have the beautiful envelope of the original vaudeville house called the Empire.
That's what that was. You're in the Empire.
We're bringing it back to life. The ghosts are here.
1911. Right.
So a century later, we're going to populate it again with live actors.
Right.
In fact, if you look up the side wall of the backstage area, you'll see that there were windows all up, and there was scaffolding, you know, that went all the way up it because the actors had to come in. It was before electricity. They had to come in. They had to have dressing rooms that had natural light. They come in the afternoon, put their makeup on, and then hang out till the evening because they had no idea what their makeup looked like if they didn't have natural light. So, you know, we kept there. They're still not boarded up, but bricked in.
Right.
But they're still there as the sort of ghosts are to help us tell a story. So the acoustician sort of built an intimate theater inside the envelope of the big vaudeville house. And it does two things. Then you have, I mean, you're hearing all these noise. Those are the sounds of progress.
Yes.
Those are saws and construction.
Constructed and built.
Around us, yes. We have hard hats on just to make sure that we're safe. But you won't hear anything. And when you sit in this building, because there's two layers, we have lots of sound insulation within the intimate theater itself. And then there's the original building has brick walls that are a foot and a half thick. The building had great bones to begin with,
right.
You know. So when the ambulances are going by or the buses and the trucks, you hear silence in here. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So we really think it's going to be even better than where we currently are, which is much smaller than this, but was never meant to be a theater.
Smaller than this. How much smaller is it?
Actually, this is in the original... The Charles Street location is 170 seats.
And this will be 250.
This will be 250. So it's not much bigger. It's four more rows, basically.
And so, your idea, before we go back, way back.
Yeah.
The idea has always been for you that theater is about intimacy.
Yeah.
It's about a small place. Yeah. It's about the actors and the audience, right?
It's about the communion of sort of coming together to tell a story. It's about allowing the audience, inviting the audience to become a part of that storytelling, that conversation, that dialogue back and forth. It's not just with the actors on each other on stage and the audience feeling like a fly on the wall, but actually the audience is breathing and reacting and vocalizing their either affirmation of what they're seeing or their dislike for a particular moment or uncomfortability. That's all part of what makes actors love to work on the stage. It's so immediate.
Right.
And I think this theater is going to celebrate that in spades. We have taken advantage of some of the latest technology out there to create the effect that there's actually no technology working. It's kind of interesting. I mean, there's a transparency. In other words, we have this, what we call a suspension grid over your head, which has very wide openings so that it feels like there's nothing there, yet you sense the hovering of a roof at 18 feet that is somehow warm and enveloping. And, mm-hmm. and keeps the focus and everyone's attention on the stage. You know this better than anybody, that the theater time is the time when we put the technology away,
right.
Where the iPhone goes back into the pocket, and there's no texting, and there's no, and we only hear one story. We're not listening to seven people or looking at six screens, or we slow down the time and the pace and rhythms of our lives, and we sit down to share a common story about human existence. So we really are careful to do that here, and we're blocked out. I mean, we use technology to give the illusion that there is no technology.
Right, like your air conditioning system.
Oh, my God. We spent more money on the air conditioning system because white noise is the enemy of drama. The power of drama is not in the spoken word, but what comes between the lines. And when somebody delivers you an important piece of information that takes you aback and might cause you to be stunned for a moment of silence on stage, if you have a white noise in the background, that kills the drama. Chekhov was so famous for writing these pauses in his play, or Harold Pinter. And at Everyman, you know, we do a little choreography with our air conditioning system on Charles Street, right? It's a normal air conditioning system. It makes noise. And it goes on when you don't want it to and comes off when you don't want it to. So our stage managers actually call cues to turn off the air conditioning at key moments. In fact, before key moments, because it takes a lag. They know exactly how long that lag is to get it to stop making white noise. Well, they won't have to worry about that here. We designed the sort of mechanical engineers crafted this incredible system of ductwork that has these huge 6-foot wide ducts so that large volumes of air can just waft into the space with no sound. White noise comes from air moving through ducts. Our ducts are so big that it just sort of lufts into the room. And our patrons will be so happy because we don't have to freeze them out
right at
the beginning of a show, because we're going to have to turn it off during the show. You know?
Just sitting here, I can feel it. I mean, the stage, this whole idea that our listeners right now, when your piece is opening in the when's it open? Next January?
January. Yeah. Less than 6 months away.
Because the first two plays of your new season will be at the theater on Charles Street.
That's right. We're going to do, instead of five shows next season, we're going to do six. And we're going to do the first two on Charles Street, and then in January, we're going to come downtown, and we're going to open in here with August Osage County, a three-story house on the stage.
Right.
The one thing that we could not do in our 11-foot-high ceiling on Charles Street.
Wow.
It's going to be so cool in here. The roof is going to go up through the suspension grid. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be really great.
And again, trying to reiterate what we're standing on, which is the theater, which literally is at eye level with the audience.
Yeah.
You're seeing the audience. The audience is like, how far back is the farthest patron?
I'm going to say about 25 feet from the stage.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's really great. I mean, we could have built a 400-seat theater in here. We chose not to. We chose to keep it small. And upstairs, we have a rehearsal hall that one day will become a second theater for Everyman. And that'll only seat 150 to 170. So the idea really isn't to get bigger. It's to get better.
So now, here we have this new energy of Kwame in town with Center Stage, and you with this dream that has come true with Everyman.
Yep.
You have the Hippodrome across the street. How much room do you think there is in this town of our community for this theater growing like it is?
There's more. Well, I want you to think of Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
I know there are people out there that say Baltimore is not Washington, and, you know, I'm one of them, but Baltimore has the capacity to take on as many theater companies as Washington. We have the same size population as them. We have more empty buildings than they do. And if we give incentives for artists to come and do their work, I mean, I can think of five or six theater companies in D.C. that wouldn't mind coming to Baltimore because they don't have the real estate in D.C. It costs so much money they can't do shows. That's why Jeff Daniel and I work so hard to get an arts entertainment district on the West Side, because there's all
Which is,
these...
This is part of it,
This
right?
is part of it, right. Yeah. We're right in the heart of it. You know, there are beautiful empty buildings that would make perfect small professional theaters or dance companies or live. I think the Arts Entertainment District downtown is going to be more, not exclusively, but more focused on performing arts. I think it's going to be attractive to theater companies, dance companies. I mean, we definitely want fine artists here as well, artists of all stripes and sizes, because we want galleries, we want places for people to come and celebrate Baltimore art. And I think this neighborhood can do it, and I think the mayor is focused on it. I haven't seen this kind of support from city government in the 22 years I've been in Baltimore. They want this to happen, and they're throwing incredible resources at it in terms of people and trying to garner support. University of Maryland is all about enriching the lives of all the students that are down here and their hospital employees. They're incredible partners. Downtown Partnership, they're so proactive about all the services that we'll need, including security and police on horseback and the pageantry. Everyone, the sort of excitement about us coming here is palpable, and I'm so sort of grateful for all the hands that have been reached out in preparation for us coming to say, what do you need? What can we do? How can we make this better? I mean, this block, when you're here during the day, it's pretty amazing. I mean, you got Starbucks on the corner, Panera Bread around the corner, Lexington Market right here. We got, the Hippodrome is going to bring 2,200. When the Hippodrome's going and every man's going, they're going to have 2,200 people in their building, and we're going to have 250 in ours. That's going to call for 3-4 new restaurants. The Alewife is right here on the corner just next to us. They can seat like 500 people in their restaurant. They're doing great work already. It's not hard to imagine a really bustling section of the city, and nobody really deserves it more than the West Side, really.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the... I'm going to... Listeners get a sense of this theater, the beginnings of it, coming to this place from where it started. Because one of the things I always say about you, Gesundheit, one of the things I always say about you is that people said, because some of us tried before you actually did it, you could not create a second Equity theater in this town. But you decided that you could.
The quickest way to get me to do something is tell me I can't. Thank God. Thank God. People said they would never come to Charles Street.
How many years ago were we talking about? We started this?
So it was 1990 was our first show. So 22 years ago. I don't know how that happened because I'm only 32.
But you're just a baby. I remember. You had to buy your first drink.
Yeah. And I had to hide it.
No.
They said, I remember when we first got our space, thanks to Michael and Alan Schechter, who owned the building on Charles Street, they sort of gave us a chance. I think I paid like $2,000 rent for the whole year, the first year. It was crazy. They were really, without their sort of foresight and willingness to take a risk on me, we would never would have had a chance to succeed. We figured out, we did 4 years of doing plays in different spaces. We figured out it was just too hard. We were having to create the audience from scratch every time. So we had to land in a home. And Charles Street, for a building that was never meant to be a theater, it served us really well. And people used to say, oh, I love the intimacy. And I'm laughing to myself. I'm thinking, well, what else can it be? It's tiny. We have no space there. I mean, you should see we're doing, you can't take it with you, there's 19 actors on stage. I swear to God, they're backstage before the show starts. And I'm doing a curtain speech out front, and they're going, will you hurry up? I can't breathe back here. Let me get on stage. At least there's room to move, right? One bathroom, 19 actors, 10-minute intermission. You tell me where the challenge is. All right? They'll have like 6 bathrooms to choose from here. I think they'd take a cut and pay to come work here. I won't do that. Don't worry, actors. I won't do it to you. But anyway, back then, unfortunately, a lot of human nature is afraid of change. And they just think, it can't be done because it's never been done. And so they said, the people will never come to Charles Street. Why another Equity Theater? We already have Center Stage. Well, I don't understand. You're going to fail. It's like that, Baltimore's been on the cusp of a renaissance for 30 years. And the only thing in the way of it is people who say, you can't do it. It's never been done before. It's crazy. So I'm hoping that some of our 4,500 subscribers will take the plunge and take a trip downtown, because I'm here to say it's 1.2 miles from the other theater into a neighborhood that is safer if you look at the crime stats, and there's a lot going on here, and it's fun. There's a lot of preconceived notions about, old world, West Side stuff, and what does that mean? I'm like, change the name. Change the name, because we're thinking about, what are you trying to remember? The old heyday of the retail era? That was 40 years ago. How old were you when you came to Huxley's and sat down for tea? Those days are gone, but there's new opportunities ahead that never existed before. And if you believe in the tipping point or all good things coming together at the same time, what Jeff Daniels doing with the Hippodrome, what University of Maryland and Dr. Perman is doing over there, with all the effort that the city is putting on trying to bring artists to the West Side and new businesses that will support the artists, I think they're onto something with cultural tourism and arts organizations as a means of economic development. We can make this neighborhood look. What's the neighborhood in New York that started out as artists? Soho. I mean, you know, you can't find an artist in there now.
Right. They can't afford it.
And what the city's focused on is making sure that there is, you know, good long-term future for artists in the neighborhood. Not that they come in, you know, fix up the neighborhood and then all of a sudden they can't afford to live there anymore. There's got to be home ownership for artists here. They've got to be able to own their own studios and support spaces. But I think that, you know, the buildings are here, the infrastructure is here, the desire is here. There's a reason that, you know, next to every McDonald's is a Burger King. There should be a theater district in town. I don't know. I think it's an exciting day.
You're listening to our interview with Vinnie Lancisi, Artistic Director of Everyman Theater, taped at their new building under construction on Fayette and Utah Streets in downtown Baltimore.
Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break. I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back.
You're listening to our interview with Vinnie Lancisi, Artistic Director of Everyman Theater, taped at their new building under construction on Fayette and Utah Streets in downtown Baltimore. Let's get back to our conversation.
So here we are, Mark, in the front of the building.
Front of the building.
All right. It's beautiful. They've restored. They've done beautiful work on the facade. And sort of restoring it to its original splendor of 1911. The historic part of the whole restoration is basically the four walls, because everything inside has been changed throughout the years.
Right.
I mean, in 1935, it went from a vaudeville house to a burlesque house called the Palace. It went from two balconies to one. And then it lasted about 5 years. It got a little too burlesque, and so it got shut down. I love that about it. It was a naughty building. And then, in 1935, it became an indoor parking garage called the New Palace Parking Garage. And in fact, you can see the sign underneath that plywood. If you stood back, you'd see it says, the New Palace Garage. So, can you imagine that? They added floors, you know, inside. They gutted it and made it a parking garage. So, 1945, World War II ended. They blasted out all of the floors and turned it into the town theater, first-run movie theater.
Right.
And it was that from then until 1990. Well, we're going to, you know, when you come in and you see your first play in this new space, in the program, you're going to see the history of the building. So what we want for our patrons is that they come through. On the street level, it's all glassed-in storefront. Very welcoming, lots of Everyman posters and what's going on and what's coming up next. And you walk in the front doors and you'll find an intimate lobby with a bar, not concessions, but a bar with maybe 10 bar stools and some bistro tables and chairs. The idea is we want people to come in before the show, get a drink or a soft drink or whatever, hang out, have a conversation. If they want to stay later and talk about the play, we want the lobby to be a welcoming public space for discourse and for, you know. There's a nice mezzanine inside the lobby that'll be used, that patrons can use, the bistro tables. I'm going to have a grand piano on that mezzanine, tinkering away so that it's, you know, you've got some sense of atmosphere as you come in. It's going to be a really nice place to hang out.
And talk about when you come in and the set designer and what you're building out right here in front.
Right. You know, we have the most incredible architects in the city, Chauvin Hallback, and they've been working really closely with our set designer, Daniel Ettinger, and they've designed a curved wall for the front. When you come in the lobby, you'll see this beautiful curved wall that leans in towards you. And he has taken set designs, sketches, costume sketches, production photos of the last 22 years of Everyman Productions, and he's making a textured wallpaper that will be put on that curved wall. So when you come in, you'll be hit with all little images, and some big images, of memories of live productions over the years. So we're going to sort of take the history with us as we move into the new building, which is nice.
So, Vinnie, I mean, it's Vinnie Lancisi. I mean, what does it feel, I mean, for you? I mean, you started this, you had this idea, this dream, this theater, and now you're moving into the this building, this incredible place. And, I mean, just...
You know, I have to tell you, I turned 50 this year. And most guys go out and get a red Corvette or something. But I'm watching the realization of a dream happen brick by brick. I wake up every morning and go, oh my God, this is really happening. It's still happening. That wasn't a dream from yesterday.
Even when you began doing this, the idea people were talking about the money we were going to raise, you couldn't raise the money to do it. It couldn't happen. It's too. Why would you want to move here at the Hippodrome? Why don't you stay where you are?
No,
you know what I mean? Right?
People love to say no. They really, you can't do that. Really? Why can't I do that? I have to say, we owe it to all the people, you know, for every person that said no. There were people out there that believed in it from the beginning and were persistent and, you know, drove through it with a lot of hard work and contributions. And I mean, this is an $18 million project, and for a little theater like Everyman to achieve it is pretty amazing. I mean, you know, our board is extraordinary. The leaders of our capital campaign, Gina Hirshhorn and Dan Hirshhorn, they led the charge in a tough economy to come up with it. You know, we started raising money and like we weren't 6 months in and the economy crashed. We're one of three professional theaters in the country right now building. Right? It's crazy. Yeah. I mean,
wow.
I get calls from Theater Communications Group in New York City, our membership organization, saying, how's it going? I mean, you know, we're talking about you. They're tweeting about us across the country. Tweeting, right? Who knew? Anyway, so
this is wonderful. I mean,
it is. It's pretty exciting.
I mean, it is. I mean, I do believe, I've always felt this way about Baltimore. I always called Baltimore, they didn't know it was a little Seattle, a little Chicago, that it was here. And this with new leadership in Center Stage, and you're building this theater, and the other thing that's going on, I can see it exploding. It could really explode.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Kwame and I have been doing some work up in New York with the big publishing houses that own the rights to all the plays and stuff. And, you know, traditionally, it's been a challenge to get... the rights to do plays down here because we're in the shadow of Washington and we compete with 52 professional theaters in Washington. So we've both been going up there and I've been showing the plans for the new building and, you know, saying next year we're going to go from 5 to 6 plays and we're employing this, you know, this many full-time, this many part-time, and we're going to do, you know, we're going to be playing to a much larger, you know, 50,000 patrons in the year. And all of a sudden, these publishing houses, and they're meeting Kwame, and Kwame's got all these new visions and plans for Center Stage, and they're like, wow, Baltimore's becoming a real theater town. All of a sudden, you know, it took the convergence of this new building and a new day for Everyman, and Kwame and as a new visionary and a new day for Center Stage, for New York to go, hey, well, maybe we should start talking to playwrights now about having their premieres in Baltimore instead of Washington, or... instead of New York, or instead of, so I do think we're on the cusp of something. You know, you got the young feeder theaters like, you know, Single Carrot. I mean, I go there and have flashbacks. I have to tell you, I mean, you know, it reminds me of early days of Everyman on Charles Street, right around the corner. It feels very reminiscent, and I believe they're in it for the long haul, and their creativity and their sort of tenacity will do them well as they lead towards the future. And all the other young theater companies that are bubbling on the scene, I hope they have aspirations to go fully professional and union. I know to some of them union's a dirty word, but really the union has been extraordinary in working with us and trying to create more jobs and work for true professionals that do it and only it, that are actors and don't want to have to wait on tables anymore. We all understand that, you know? And I think it's happening. It's happening. Look at all the great actors that are living in Baltimore now. You know, some of them are commuting to Washington still a lot, but they're choosing to live in Baltimore.
Some of them who came here to do TV have bought homes and stayed here.
Stayed here, absolutely. This is the place to live. Nobody wants to live in Washington. Even Washingtonians don't want to live in Washington.
You would know.
I was there for 4 years. Great place to visit, but you don't want to live there. Anyway, look, I love Washington. Some of my best friends are Washingtonians. But Baltimore is a great place to live.
You're listening to our interview with Vinnie Lancisi, Artistic Director of Everyman Theater, taped at their new building under construction on Fayette and Utah Streets in downtown Baltimore. Let's get back to our conversation.
As we're looking at it, can you see this?
I can't totally. What you see here is the floor is built up almost 6 feet. All the mechanicals are under the floor. And then what will happen is the truck will back up. There'll be a lift that will lift so they can bring the lumber into here. There'll be 2 one-ton pulleys there so that a piece of scenery can be lifted up and stored up there. And over here is a one-ton motor that can hoist scenery all the way up to the third floor to be brought into the rehearsal room. So when they build a piece of scenery, they can get it out of the way and actors can use it in rehearsal. It's really a great use of a limited space.
You know? So are you going to be able to hire people to do all this?
Yeah.
There's going to be more people you need to run this place, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we're working really hard to expand the staff in a smart way, do smart growth, you know. We're taking some of the best talent we've got and sort of beefing them up for the larger, you know, more amounts of plays we're doing, larger scenery, more, you know. It's definitely going to take a larger infrastructure, but we've been beefing it up slowly in preparation for the move. And then in production, we'll have 2 new full-time employees and several part-time that will be responsible for getting it all together and operating on a higher level. This is where we grow up. You know, no longer the scrappy street fighters, you know, working with 2 tin cans and a whole lot of hope. We're still scrappy, but you know, we've got a few tools now to do some great stuff. Again, it's not going to be in wow factor. It's going to be in a quality level of achievement that for the audience is going to perceive right away. When you're in a building that's designed for that craft as compared to an adaptive this is adaptive reuse, but all in the purpose of making the best theater we can.
Right.
You know, the building we were in before was a bowling alley. Happened to have low ceilings, happened to be intimate, and it worked out. We made it work as best we could, and it was fabulous. This should be extraordinary.
Now you've got the seating you've always dreamed of.
Yeah, I have no more excuses now. If it's not good, there's only one person to blame. Pressure's on.
Can you handle it?
Don't think I'm not feeling it.
I know you are feeling it.
Please, choosing this season was like a nightmare. Because you think, oh my God, what am I going to do? It's the first year in the new building. It better be good. What's it going to be? You know? Fortunately, I got to go from 5 to 6 plays, which actually helped. It helps in the breadth and scope of the season. It makes it a little bit easier. I picked 6 amazing plays that I thought were famous and should be told, stories that should be told in Baltimore that, ironically, have never played Baltimore. It's crazy. So we opened with Time Stand Still, which was a huge hit on Broadway 2-3 years ago with Laura Linney, and it's a play by Donald Margulies, and I think it's an important story, one of a whole new generation of playwrights that are going to be writing about the effects of 10 years of war on our lives back home. So it's a story about photojournalist from Iraq, a woman in her early 40s who gets blown up by a roadside bomb. And so the play takes place in Brooklyn. She has been flown back. She was in a coma for 2 weeks. She's got shrapnel all over the side of her face. Her leg is permanently, or not permanently, but seriously dangerous, seriously hurt. And it's about her relationship with her long-term live-in partner and who wants to get married now, and what happens when the dust settles, and what toll does it take to be an observer and chronicler of war. So I think it's an important play. I think it's a dynamic play. Ultimately, it's about their relationship. But I was amazed by it. So we're going to open the season with that. We're still going to be on Charles Street, right? The first 2 plays are on Charles Street. The second play, we're going to lighten things up a bit, very funny play called Heroes, which is adapted from a French novel by Tom Stoppard. It's about 3 World War I vets who are living in an old age home for veterans. And it all takes place out on the veranda of this estate that has been turned into an old age home. And basically the play is these 3 old men trying to plot a way to break out. You know, and go on an excursion and get out from these nasty nuns that are running the place. Hilariously funny.
Funny play.
Donald Hickman. Yep. He's the perfect man for that job. Perfect man for that job, because he will find every ounce of humor. And there's a lot of wisdom in the play, you know. It's kind of, it feels a little Waiting for Godot-ish. You know, it's not just a comedy. Kind of Yasmina Riza-ish. Then we're going to move downtown for the big move in January, and we're going to open with August Osage County, the Tracy Letts Pulitzer Prize winner. We're going to follow that with God of Carnage, Yasmina Riza's hilarious comedy about two parents of 11-year-olds that get in a fight on a school playground, and then the parents get together to quote-unquote talk about it, and the drinks start flowing and the fight starts with the parents. Very funny stuff. And then we're going to do Pulitzer Prize winner Top Dog Underdog by Susan Laurie Parks. Fascinating play. And then we're going to close with an adaptation of The Bose Stratagem by George Farquhar. Sounds kind of weird to talk about an adaptation about a play that was already written in English, but it is an adaptation that the adapters were Thornton Wilder and Ken Ludwig. And I love this story. I guess Tappan Wilder, Thornton's nephew, loves to tell the story that his uncle was not a hoarder of any kind. He really didn't keep stuff. He was famous for throwing important things away. But when he died, they found this adaptation of Bose Stratagem that he had been working on for a long time, because he always felt that George Farquhar was a better playwright and should be up there with the Sheridans and the School for Scandals of this world. And then all the Bose Stratagem really needs is a little tweaking of the plot and updating of the language, and it would be hilariously funny. So when he died, he was working on that. So Tappan Wilder and the Wilder Estate asked Ken Ludwig, Washington, D.C. playwright, if he would finish the adaptation. And he did. And they premiered it at the Shakespeare Theater, 2006. And it was a huge hit. All six plays at Everyman are all Baltimore premieres. And I love that about our first season of the New Space. I'm only directing two. I'm doing August Osage County and The Bose Stratagem. And I love the fact that they're all famous plays or by famous playwrights, and none of them have played Baltimore before, because that is absolutely what the role of regional theater should be. So it's a great year. It's a great year when Baltimore could do that, and Kwame can, as a new artistic director, can see a play that he doesn't like that wins the Pulitzer Prize and write a play in response to it. Now that's theatrical discourse. You know what I mean? Exactly what he should be doing.
That's how he's in his season.
Yeah. This is an exciting year to be a theater goer in Baltimore. It really is. It
blows my mind.
You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show, Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. 1-800-638-7781.